That one is driven deep to right field. Ahern back, track, wall, see ya. Home run, Voit. Boy, he's come off the IL feeling it. The Yankees lead 4-0.
And the Yankees cruise to the victory yesterday. The Royals fall by a final of 8-1. And Brad Keller, another rough first inning. Struggled at the very beginning of the ballgame, which has been a common theme throughout this year. And it continued yesterday afternoon in the Bronx when the bullpen is depleted. The Royals had to really basically leave him out there, even though he was struggling. Keller actually worked out of a bases loaded jam there at the end of his outing in the fifth. Problem was he only went 5 innings, 114 pitches. Labored through all 5 innings, allowed 4 runs on 9 hits. The pitches, 114, the most he's thrown, second most in his career. Last time he threw 114 pitches, he went 8 innings, 2 runs. Now that's an effective start. Aaron Judge, 344-foot homer in the first, and 4 singles helped the Yankees get an early lead there with 2 in the first, 1 in the second. They got 1 in the third, led 4-0. Royals 1 in the fifth, 4-1. Then the Yankees tacked on 3 in the sixth and 1 in the eighth, and the Yankees win it fairly easily. And the Royals strike out 11 times. Salvador Perez 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts. But in the lineup, remember he was nicked up. He played DH yesterday. He was nicked up the day before. And the Royals fall to the Yankees by a final of 8-1. So the boys in blue will be back at it against the Texas Rangers. The Rangers are 27-48. Mike Minor going up against his former team. 7:05 first pitch tonight. Minor 6-4 on the season. ERA of 4.48. By the way, Keller, going into yesterday's ERA was 6.34, and hard to believe, but it's actually higher after yesterday's performance, 6.39. And we are now, quite honestly, almost to the halfway point of the season. You have to wonder when he's going to figure it out, or will he figure it out? And there have been a lot of conversations about whether Keller's just simply a two-time through the order pitcher. He can get you through 5, maybe. But the third time through the order, opposing teams' batting averages are going way high compared to the first and second time through the order. And then yesterday, he struggled through the first and second time through the order. So, you know, if the Royals are going to go anywhere, they need better starting pitching. We've talked about it over and over, and it continues to be true. When they get good starting pitching, the Royals, that's coincided with their winning streaks. And when they've gone into funks, it's because their starting pitching has not given them enough. And quite honestly, yesterday, Keller did not give them enough. Here's Matheny on Keller's struggles.
The first inning has set a tone for him that I believe takes him away from his game plan. And every one of the guys are going to get into survival mode of, you know, what pitch do I need to kind of get through this instead of trusting. We've talked about this a lot with a lot of the pitchers, and Brad has been around. He's still a young pitcher, still learning. I'd like to see him continue to have trust in the movement that he has and use the bottom of the zone. And trust the fact that we're gonna make plays behind them, and that they are gonna be hit towards people. But unfortunately, kind of took him out of his game a little bit, and they ran him deep in his counts.
Brad Keller has allowed 19 combined runs in the first innings of his starts. That's the second highest total in baseball. He's now lost his last 4 games after going 5-2 in his previous 8. Although even up and down there, and got some run support to get a few victories, his record is better than it really should be. To be quite honest with you, at 6-7, or 6-8 now, his record should be worse, to be quite frank. But it is what it is, and the Royals lose, and they'll play Texas tonight at 7:05. Local sports, Shrine Bowl coming up.
Yeah, Shrine Bowl tomorrow night in Hutchinson at Gowan Stadium, the 48th Kansas Shrine Bowl taking place. And from North Central Kansas, we have Spencer Davidson of Minneapolis competing in the event. There are actually quite a few Mid-Continent League players that are in the game, including Ty Sides of Phillipsburg, Jonah Reuter, and Christian Hawks of Norton, as well as Ethan Abel of Oakley on the 11-man level. Then Harlan Obioha from Hoxie at the 8-man level is participating in the game as well. And then Jeff Hennick of Oakley is one of the coaches. So a lot of Mid-Continent League representation. Nobody from Smith Center this year, but it's kind of a look at some of the area players of note that you'd want to pay attention to and keep track of there at the Shrine Bowl. Again, that's at 7 o'clock tomorrow night, Gowan Stadium in Hutchinson. So if you have some free time, want to head down, that's when it is and where it is coming up tomorrow.
All right, latest local sports information available to you, ncksports.com. And another no-hitter in baseball. In less than 3 months, Major League Baseball has tied the modern era record for no-hitters in the season. Last night, Chicago Cubs righty Zach Davies in 3 relievers blanked the Dodgers 4-0. And that's the 7 no-hitter of 2021. And we are not to the halfway point of the season yet. Wasn't your prettiest no-hitter, if there's such a thing. Zach Davies, 6 no-hit innings, walk 5. Had more walks than strikeouts. But only twice did he have a 1-2-3 inning. But at the bottom line is it didn't allow a hit. Bullpen got done the rest of the way. He was removed after 6 innings and 94 pitches. Bullpen was great the rest of the way. Cubs get a 4-pitcher combined no-hitter last night, 7th no-hitter of the season. College World Series yesterday, and Texas stays alive, punches their ticket to the semifinals, waving the Big 12 conference banner. Texas eliminates Virginia 6-2. So the semifinals are set for today at 1 o'clock this afternoon on ESPN2. It's NC State versus Vanderbilt. NC State wins, they're in the College World Series Championship Series. If Vanderbilt wins, then there'll be another game. Vanderbilt's got to beat NC State twice to punch their ticket. Same situation applies to Texas. They have to beat Mississippi State twice to make it to the World Series Championship finale. And the best 2 out of 3, Mississippi State, meanwhile, just has to win the first game. Mississippi State, Texas, that is at 6 o'clock tonight on ESPN. So here's the situation. If NC State and Vanderbilt, Vanderbilt wins, they'll play again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. If NC State wins, they can rest and get ready coming up on Monday. And same thing applies to Mississippi State, or Texas can force a winner-take-all game to try to make it to the championship series. So the College World Series continues up in Omaha. Texas staying alive last night. Well, the Clippers, in order to have a chance to make it to their first ever NBA Finals, wasn't technically a must-win, but it certainly felt like it last night, and the Clippers came through with flying colors.
Paul George gets it off in time. Oh, he banks it in! It's good! Paul George at the buzzer! 1.1 on the inbound from half court.
I finally got one right. Finally got a prediction right. Yeah, the Suns, and I said yesterday, Chris Paul, I think, will be rusty. He was.
Mm-hmm.
And Devin Booker did not play well. Maybe he wore a mask in warmups, and you know that maybe the nose is bothering him a little bit. I don't know. And I've said this, and I'll say this until I die, is that role players usually, very often, play better on their home floor than they do on the road. And the Suns' role players weren't as good last night, and the Clipper role players were much better. And that's why. When, you know, what's his knucklehead, Stephen A. Smith and others sit here talking about how the Clippers had to win game 2. He called it a must win, which was just stupid. They're running out of material for the talking heads on these shows. They are lacking material, or they're too lazy to come up with something creative and different. Because when you talk about a game 2 of a playoff series and saying it's a must-win for a team that was down 0-2 the previous 2 series. And, oh, by the way, the Clippers, if they lost the Phoenix game 2, which they did, both those games were in Phoenix. So if the Clippers come back and win games 3 and 4 and hold serve at home, which happens many times in a best-out-of-7 series, we're back to square one. We're game 5, and they didn't have to win game 2.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, if the Clippers win game 4, obviously they didn't have to win game 2. I mean, if the Clippers win the series, they obviously didn't have to win game 2. I just think it is so silly and stupid that you talk about a must win when you've only played 1 game in a series. Now, you want to talk about must win. Last night was obvious. That's the obvious part. You know, no team in NBA history down 3-0 has ever come back and won a series. So you could say it's a must win, although technically it's not, because you could rattle off 4 in a row, which the Clippers did. Against the Utah Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
So can you come back from 3-0? Yes, but NBA history, it's never happened. It's happened in the NHL. It's happened in baseball, of course, but it has never happened in the NBA. Now, teams that come back from 3-1, and the Clippers could easily lose game 4 coming up tomorrow, be down 3-1, could still come back and win the series. There have been multiple times teams have been down 3-1 in NBA playoffs and come back to win. All you got to do is tell the Clippers. They were up 3-1 last year against the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets came back from not 1, but 2 3-1 deficits.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Clippers, if somebody tells me that game 4 is a must-win for the Clippers, I'm going to start laughing hysterically again. Is it beneficial? Well, duh. It would tie the series at two. But it doesn't mean the Clippers season is over. It doesn't. It absolutely doesn't. And the Clippers have been very resilient. Without Kawhi Leonard, Reggie Jackson's come up big. Paul George was very good last night. He bounced back from the tough two free throw misses. Tyronn Lue, I think, has been a better leader for the Clippers than Doc Rivers was. Last night, Chris Paul and Devin Booker combined to shoot 10 of 40. And George was solid, 27 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists, nearly a triple-double. And you look at what the role players do in these games, and you look at the Clippers last night, Terrence Mann, 12 points, 6 of 8. Reggie Jackson, 23, 9 of 17. Patrick Beverley, outstanding defense, hit a couple of threes. Marcus Morris isn't – he's playing on one leg right now, basically. Luke Kennard, a couple three-pointers off the bench. And then George, he's been the catalyst. And he didn't shoot the ball well last night, 9 of 26. But he had 15 rebounds, 8 assists. He'd had some turnovers. But they've gotten contributions from others, and the role players played better last night. Whereas Phoenix, their best players didn't play quite as well as they had been. Ayton was still solid. Paul was okay. Booker struggled, 5 of 21. Paul really wasn't okay. He was 5 of 19. He did have 12 assists and just 2 turnovers. Cameron Payne only played 4 minutes last night after scoring 29. He scored 2 points. So there's a role player right there. Mm-hmm. It had a major drop-off. So it is just silly to get all riled up when a team is down 0-1. And sometimes it's almost silly to be freaking out when a team's down 0-2 if they've lost the first two on the road, because you can easily change the momentum of a series and you make adjustments. Mm-hmm. The Clippers did. I would not be surprised at all if the Clippers win game 4 and it's 2-2 going back to Phoenix. Wouldn't be surprised at all. Wouldn't be surprised if the Suns, you know, dig deep and win. But the recipe was there. You could see that the Clippers, the way they've been, if this was a Clipper team of last year, they might have rolled over. They might have lost last night. But the Clipper team of this year is more resilient. And I tell you, they've had guys step up in the absence of Kawhi Leonard, who I don't think is going to play in this series. And I don't even know I don't think he's going to play the rest of the playoffs, to be quite frank with you.
No, I would be surprised, actually, if he does.
Even if they make the finals, yeah. I don't think he's going to play. So Clippers-Suns, we now have at least some kind of series.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay. And the Suns, I want them to win the series. They had to lose at some point. They won 9 in a row in the playoffs. They finally lost. So game 4 in L.A. coming up tomorrow. And then you've got the Hawks and the Bucks coming up tonight. And, you know, some people are going to say, well, it's a must-win for the Bucks. They got to win. They can't be 0-2, down 0-2, lose first two at home. Well, the Clippers did that against the Mavericks, and they came back and won. And we know it's not like you got to go deep into the history books to find some team that's ever done it. So is it a must-win for the Bucks tonight? No, it's not. But I think they're going to win. I think the Hawks, I think the Bucks figured something out defensively in the fourth quarter, made some changes. Trae Young wasn't nearly as effective offensively in the fourth quarter, although for the game he had 48, of course. I think the Bucks are going to play better. I think the Bucks are going to win tonight. I think the Hawks are going to be like they were in other series. You know, you get the first game, you feel like you've done enough, and what have the Hawks done in their previous two series when they won game 1?
They lost game 2.
They lost game 2. In fact, the last series, then they were actually down in the series to the Sixers. So, I think Milwaukee's going to win tonight, and that series will be tied 1, and then we'll shift back to Atlanta. That is 7:30 tonight on TNT between the Bucks and the Hawks. Anything else you want to add about the NBA? There is a coaching change, a guy going back to his old familiar stomping grounds.
Yeah, Rick Carlisle going back to Indiana. He was there from 03 to 07, so last 13 years in Dallas, but did not have success at the end of his tenure at Indiana, but obviously had more success in Dallas, and they have forgotten about that and want him back, apparently. So,
well, he had a winning record. Yeah. He's the fourth winningest coach in Indiana. He had success there, and now the talk is that Jason Kidd is the one that will probably be the new head coach of the Dallas Mavericks, which I'm not convinced Jason Kidd's that great of a head coach. Usually you're great players, and Jason Kidd was a great player. Mm-hmm. Okay, people that don't – you younger people out there – don't know anything about Jason Kidd, one of the best passers in NBA history. Made his teammates better, and Jason Kidd was an outstanding talent. Not a great shooter, although he became a better shooter as he kept working on it. He became a better shooter in the middle, late part of his career. So there is hope for Ben Simmons. Because I have people writing off Ben Simmons. And, well, you know, some people just can't shoot. Well, Rajon Rondo couldn't shoot. And people tell me Ben Simmons can't win a title because he's ineffective offensively. Rajon Rondo was aggressive, so he could score getting to the bucket, but he didn't score a ton for the Celtics when they won an NBA title. Now, granted, they had the big three. They had Garnett and Pierce and Ray Allen. But Rondo was an offensive liability. They laid off of him, and they still won an NBA title. And then 2 years later, it went to Game 7 and should have won the NBA title with a double-digit lead in L.A. against Kobe and the Lakers. So it can be done. But the point I'm making here is there are lots of players, like a Jason Kidd, who improved their shooting. I'm not saying they became a marksman, but they improved their shooting to where they weren't a liability offensively in regards to shooting the ball. They weren't just always passing the ball and turning down every open look. Jason Kidd got better. He worked on it very, very hard. So did Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen was not a good shooter coming into the NBA. You can look up the statistics. He was not. He turned into a guy that was a very solid shooter from the perimeter. Mm-hmm. Rajon Rondo, as I mentioned, is now making threes for the Clippers in the playoffs, shots that I never thought he could ever make. So it can be done. It can be done. Are you expecting Ben Simmons to become the next, you know, Damian Lillard? No, that's not going to happen. But if he could improve his shooting to be a poor man Scottie Pippen from a shooting standpoint, suddenly that takes the Sixers to another level, even if he just improves that much. So it's just too easy for people. It's so convenient for people to give up on a team when they're down 0-2 in a series. It's so convenient for people to give up on a player who's only 20. I think Ben Simmons is only 26, if I remember right. I mean, there's plenty of time for him to figure stuff out, and it applies to all sports. And Jason Kidd, maybe the same thing applies to him as a head coach. You know, he hasn't been a great head coach where he has previously. He was with the Bucks. I forgot where else he was a head coach. Wasn't he a head coach elsewhere besides the Bucks? I thought he was. But
did he coach Brooklyn for a while?
That's what I thought. I'm
pretty sure, like,
I thought he was a head coach at a couple stops before. I'll pull it up real quickly.
Could be wrong about
but
that.
Perhaps the third time's a charm for Jason Kidd. Yes, he was with the Nets and Brooklyn, and 2013-14 he was with the Bucks for 4 years as a head coach. And of course, he played for the Dallas Mavericks. So now he played for the Nets as well. Mm-hmm. He's an assistant coach with the Lakers right now. Perhaps a third time's a charm for Jason Kidd, and he will be better as a head coach, and he can learn from some of the things from the previous stops. Maybe Dallas is the perfect fit, or maybe it's a bad, horrible hire, and he's just not a very good head coach.
Yeah.
But how many NBA players can you think of that were great players? And Jason Kidd was a great player. How many NBA coaches can you sit here and tell me that were great players that were really good or great NBA coaches?
Yeah, we've done this like
yes,
before,
I know.
Right? And I mean, Larry Bird's at the top
that's
of that
about
list.
The only
and
one
and
I can...
Really the only one that's – I mean, if you go back, Bill Russell had success,
yeah,
right? But he was a player coach to start, right?
Well, yeah, look and at then, the guys, yeah, all the Hall of Famers
exactly,
on his team.
Like,
yeah.
he just took it over from Red Auerbach and was a player coach for a while. And then,
right.
So he's a guy that now is actually going into the Hall of Fame this year as a coach.
Yes.
But other than that, I mean, you've gone through the list, and it's just not – the ones that are the best players just don't – it doesn't translate into a lot of success coaching-wise.
You know, Steve Nash has, you know, Irving and Durant and Harden his first year as a head coach. No knock on Steve Nash, but I think lots of guys that know the game, whether they were coaches or not or before. I mean, Steve Kerr, I think he's a good coach. I don't want to knock Steve Kerr, but he also had a tremendous amount of talent that he inherited from Mark Jackson. Jackson got fired after they won 50 games. And then Kerr inherited that. So Kerr, you think about Kerr and Steve Nash. You know, Nash was a great player.
Yeah, Kerr wouldn't
Kerr was
fall
a role
into
player.
The,
right.
into the category that we're talking about great player in the NBA that's like a Hall of Famer. That.
But the point I want to make with those two is they didn't have any prior head coaching experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And they inherited great situations. Jason Kidd... You know, I don't think the Nets was a great situation in 13 and 14. The Bucks was a better situation. And the Mavericks, you have, you know, Luka to work around, who is a point guard. I mean, he has the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
Jason Kidd could help him get better. I'm not sold on Jason Kidd as a head coach at all. He is only 48, though. So perhaps, you know, we talk about don't give up on a series, don't give up on a player like Ben Simmons. Perhaps you don't give up on Jason Kidd. Remember, Bill Belichick didn't have a ton of success in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did make the playoffs 1 year with Cleveland. And then he's considered the greatest coach of all time. Whether it's all Brady's doing or whether Belichick gets credit for it, that's up to every, you know, talking head to discuss amongst themselves. But not every coach just steps in and is automatically great from the beginning. Sometimes they got to pay their dues to get to where they are, or mm-hmm. sometimes they have to go through adversity and improve as a head coach. And Jason Kidd perhaps will have learned from his previous two stops, but it sounds like he's going to be new head coach of the Mavericks. Rick Carlisle now going back to the Pacers, which would mean, if that all is true, there's five openings available. Becky Hammon could be the first women's head coach in professional sports in the United States with the main sports. She could be. She's interviewed for the Portland Trailblazer job. I believe she's interviewed in a few other places as well. Mm-hmm. Chauncey Billups, former NBA player who was an all-star. I wouldn't say he's a great player. At times he was. Very, very good player. He's never been a head coach. He's assistant this year with the Clippers. He could end up being the head coach of the Trailblazers. Dame Lillard apparently wants Chauncey Billups mm-hmm. to be his head coach. So there's a job to think about. The Celtics just hired their head coach. So actually that would mean if Kidd takes the Mavericks, there'd be four left because mm-hmm. the Celtics just hired their coach, who was an assistant under Popovich for a while. And where was he this year?
Brooklyn.
Yeah. So there's still some openings out there. And you and I are talking about this off the air. I think it'd be awesome if Becky Hammon became a head coach in the NBA. I think it'd be fantastic. You have a theory on this. Why don't you share your theory?
I think Becky Hammon is going to be the next coach of the Spurs. And I don't think that she's going to – and I don't – I'm going to say if it's her decision or the teams are going to go other directions. But I don't feel like – I think there's a lot of people that just feel like Becky Hammon will jump at any chance to coach in the NBA. No mm-hmm. matter who gives her that chance, she'll go ahead and take it. But I really – there's real talk about Greg Popovich stepping aside not long from now. And I feel like the Spurs are the fit, obviously. She's been there for years and years as an assistant coach. And it's a fit for a franchise, I feel like, that wants to make that decision and make that call and hire the first women's head coach because she's right on their staff. And she's led the summer league team to a championship. I think she's invested in San Antonio is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And if she thinks there's an opportunity for her to get that job, that she will kind of go through this process, talk to people, understand what it takes, going through, you know, the interview process and getting ideas from people of what that part takes. But I really feel like there's a really good chance she's not going anywhere until Greg Popovich retires.
I think a little bit of a wild card in this situation from the standpoint that, and I know Greg Popovich, I don't know him personally, but I know just reading and hearing what he has to say and the fact that he, you know, has a woman as one of his top assistants, that I guarantee you she has been a sponge soaking up all that coaching experience and all that. But I think Greg Popovich knows how important it is for a woman to break the barrier and be a head coach of men's sports. And I think Greg Popovich, I believe in your theory. I believe he's told her, interview at these positions, and you know what? If there's one that you think's a home run,
blows your socks off,
go for it. But if you don't, this would be the best possible situation for you to have success because you know San Antonio and you're going to inherit a pretty decent roster. I'm not saying it's the Nets roster. Popovich and Buford, they've done a good job with that franchise, obviously. And so I think the key is, and this is the case for anybody that breaks a barrier, look at Jackie Robinson. If Jackie Robinson ended up being a horrible player, that could have set things backwards in regards to the progress we made to have black baseball players. Instead, he was very good. He handled the pressure as much as he could, and there was unbelievable, bad, horrible things happening to him, if you've watched the movie based on the true story. But it had to be the right person to break that barrier, right?
Yeah.
Like for the NFL, maybe the right person is Carl Nassib in regards to being the first active NFL player that is openly gay. That's breaking a barrier, correct? And so Becky Hammon, the first woman that can break the barrier and be a head coach, it is important, very important, for her not to fall flat on her face and it just completely be an implosion. It needs to be successful because if Becky Hammon becomes a head coach of an NBA team and she goes out and she ends up having a bad 1 or 2 years and she gets fired, it's going to set women back in regards to getting head coaching jobs in the NBA. Mm-hmm. All right. We're seeing more females as assistants in NFL in some different capacities, which I think is great. We're seeing more women now starting to get involved a little bit in front office and director of operations in universities and also professional sports teams. That's great as well. But when you're a head coach, it's all out there for everybody to see. Plus, you have to deal with the press conferences afterwards, how you handle the media. And I guarantee you some of the media is going to be really, really, really hard on her. And some of the media might give her a pass because she's a woman. It can work both ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe in your theory. I think that San Antonio is the best possible place for her to be very successful, to where that will continue to leave the door open for other women to be candidates, be head coaches in the NBA. And the worst thing would be for her to go to a situation and she just takes the first one that she gets offered, and deep down she knows it's not probably the right fit and it just does not work. It will set women back in regards to how quickly you can move forward with the process of having more women in high profile positions in regards to coaching on the sidelines. So I agree with you 100%. I think that conversation's taken place. I think Greg Popovich would love to have Becky Hammon be the heir apparent. And I think the Spurs are probably prepared for it as well. But it is very important for her to be successful. Is that too much pressure on one person? It is. It always is when you break a barrier. It was way too much pressure on Jackie Robinson, but it has to be the right person. I think Becky Hammon is the right woman to be the first woman in professional sports in America as a head coach of the major sports. I think she is the right person. Could be completely wrong about that, but San Antonio to me would make the most sense. And would she, and now if she has success at San Antonio, will she get still not enough credit? Well, you're a woman, but you inherited from Pop. You know, Pop taught you everything, or he's running the strings from his house on a phone texting you. I mean, there'll be dumb people that'll say that stuff. She might not get enough credit, whereas if she went to a brand new place, she might get more credit.
Yeah.
I get that too. But it's really, really important. The first person to try to break a barrier needs to be successful. Otherwise, I think it stunts the movement of proceeding in that direction.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that, too. And it's the right market, too, right, where you're not going to get a lot of scrutiny from the locals, right?
And like Portland wouldn't be a bad market.
Well, they were talking about Boston, you know, and that'd be a tough place to start, right, to go to Boston and take that job and have to be under that scrutiny.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, Boston sports fans are too. You know, they want to win, and they're pretty competitive, and they're probably, you know, obviously not as bad as Philly, but San Antonio, I feel like it's like a perfect market too. It's like everything's perfect about that.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing is, when does Pop step aside, and will she wait for that?
That's exactly right.
And that's what this all hinges on.
Well, she's not. How old is Becky
Hammon? She feels like Pop's ready and been grooming her to take that job, then she's probably going to stay there longer than we might even think.
Becky Hammon's only 44, so she's got time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
But you don't want to be sitting there like a Will Muschamp at Texas, you know, coaching, waiting, and just sit around and wait.
And then finally got tired of waiting.
Matt Brown to leave, and you're just tired of waiting, so I got to go somewhere else. I got to find something different.
He went Florida, South Carolina, wasn't a very good coach.
Yeah, it didn't work out for him when he left, but, you know, you don't want to be sitting around waiting.
Right. Well, it worked out for him financially, but.
It definitely did.
Not successfully as a coach, you're right. Hey, breaking news. This is Husker fans. If you don't know, Bill Moose's tenure as Nebraska's AD is over. His departure, which multiple sources have confirmed to the Lincoln Journal Star, is imminent. Wow. Nebraska could announce the move as early as this afternoon. The exact reason for Moose's departure is not clear. Moose and a Nebraska spokesman did not return messages for comment. Moose, who was originally hired in October of 2017, led the hiring process for Scott Frost to be the head football coach, Fred Hoiberg to be the men's basketball coach, and he also hired the baseball coach, Will Bolt, who's done a great job in the Nebraska baseball program, and he championed Nebraska's in-progress $155 million football facility project, a contract that ran through December 31st of next year, 2022. Moose is 70. He said repeatedly that he wanted to stay at least through the end of his contract. He goes, "We're going to move the dial here, and I don't want to be looking at that success from afar. I have every intention of fulfilling the contract." But now something has changed. Don't know exactly what. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is.
And let me tell you something. When the guy, if you're a coach, and obviously those three are, and I think Will Bolt's certainly safe. I think all three are safe for now. But if I'm Scott Frost, I would suddenly, my eyebrows would go up and be like, okay, there might be more pressure. And is that why he's stepping down? Is he getting pressure to step down and somebody else to lead Nebraska athletics because football hasn't gotten to where they want? And he ends up being the fall guy instead of Scott Frost.
Well, that's going to work. And I think that's where it starts, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with a guy like Scott Frost that's, you know, beloved by the fan base from what he did as a player, right? Your first probably attack is going to be on the AD. Like, why did he do this? You know, and maybe we should figure something out here. And it's an easy way to say, hey, we'll get a new AD in here, and that new AD can get rid of Scott Frost instead of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
It can be like, oh, we love Scott, but the AD is just like, we need to go in a different direction when they get a new one. I think that's probably a lot of it right there.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Right, wrong or otherwise. I just like, I got some of those people are like, we don't want to do that to Scott, but somebody else can.
We've said this over and over on the show. And if you're a regular or diehard sports fan and understand how college athletics works, you already know the answer to this, and you probably know what I'm about to say. Athletic directors are not judged on how successful women's basketball is, men's baseball. The number one thing they're judged on, quite frankly, is at the Power Five universities, for sure, it's football. You know, Gene Taylor can do a really good job with all the sports programs, but if football is a colossal mess and he continues to hire bad coaches, he's out no matter what in regards that he could hit a home run hire with everybody else in every other sport at K-State. But if he strikes out in football, he ain't going to last. And all you got to do is a perfect example is look at the ADs that have been at the University of Kansas, see Shane Zinger.
Mm-hmm.
KU basketball, awesome. Baseball's had some runs. Volleyball's been pretty good at times. Women's basketball, not so much. That's not a big deal in regards to the financial physicality of a university. But where did Shane Zinger continue to mess up?
Hiring football coaches.
Football coaches. That's why he got fired.
Yeah.
Basketball was doing great. Of course, it's not that hard.
When you go
step
to Kansas,
aside and let Bill Self.
When you go to Kansas as an AD, you don't have to worry about basketball.
You shouldn't.
Right?
Like you shouldn't. Have to.
The coach should take care of that part of it for you. So that's
right.
not going to be
right.
something that's weighing you right. down at KU.
Yes.
Now, other schools it might, but at KU, it shouldn't be bearing down on you, and you should be scared about that failing.
Which, in theory, should make you better at football because you don't have to be distracted and focus more time on basketball because you've got football. That would be beneficial, mm-hmm. I would think. But it didn't work out for Shane Zinger. It didn't work out for Jeff Long because of many reasons. And now we'll find out if it works for the new AD there at the University of Kansas. But the number one job when a new AD is hired at a Power 5 university, more often than not, it's to fix the football program. It's to put the football program back where it needs to be or to improve it. It's the number one priority for major universities in this country. In the athletic department, you can love baseball and basketball and volleyball all you want, but the bread maker, the money maker at the Power Five universities, it's very, very simple. It's football. And if you don't get that right, your time as an AD is going to be a lot shorter than you would like. And I think there's something here, no doubt, with pressure, maybe some from boosters, and that's usually where it comes from, or alums, that, okay, Scott Frost isn't going to be the fall guy. Somebody's got to take the fall. And, yeah, we think Hoiberg might be the guy at Nebraska basketball, although he hasn't really done a great job yet so far. And we got baseball, but Nebraska people don't care about baseball that much. Nebraska's always been a football state. It's their professional team in town or in the state. I know. I've lived there. I understand it. I think most people – I don't think any Husker fan would disagree with that. It is the game in town. And despite being not very good for a long time now and not winning a conference championship in 23 years, I believe it is – let that sink in. Almost a quarter of a century, Nebraska has not won a conference championship in football. Fans are either have gotten to the point where they're fed up or they're just ready for something to be done. And sometimes the wolves come knocking at the door and you got to give something to the wolves. And you believe Scott Frost, I think he needs some more time. Here, we'll give you Bill Moose. And we'll go hire a new AD. Mm-hmm. And guess what that does? That gives you a little bit more time for Scott Frost. It also gives those Husker fans that have been upset, wanting something to happen, it suddenly gives them at least some hope. Well, we're going to get AD, and he's going to change this around, or he's going to put Frost on notice. Or it could end up being that the new coach comes in and gets rid of Scott Frost, which some people in Nebraska might be cool with. And Scott Frost might have more pressure to be better sooner, and maybe that's part of the problem is that he was going to be given time, and now he won't be given as much time. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a bad thing. I have no idea. But it, of all the places in this country when it comes to football programs, there aren't many more that are more passionate about their football program than Nebraska Cornhusker fans. And they have been not relevant for a while now. And quite frankly, there's even a few that are just become indifferent, which is amazing. You never thought that ever happened. That's what happens when you have 23 years of not being at the level you expected to be. And you change conferences. And then you get the home run hire you think in Scott Frost. And sometimes the home run hire that everybody thinks is a home run hire flounders. And the hire that nobody thinks much about, like, oh, don't even know that dude, ends up being the best hire you ever had. See Roy Williams at KU. Nobody knew about Roy Williams at KU. Nobody. The fan base knew nothing about Roy Williams. I remember when he was hired. Who's Roy Williams? He's never been a head coach. Why are we hiring Roy Williams? And that worked out pretty good. Les Miles was a home run hire for football, right? For a lot of people. Oh, that's a guy who won a national championship. How'd that work out?
Not well.
Not well. Not well. So this is going to be very interesting to see who they get as a new athletic director at Nebraska. Interesting.
Yeah, I have no idea where you go. We'll find out. But
yeah, that's a huge breaking story. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that was coming. All right, the NHL playoffs resumed last night, and one team has punched their ticket to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Bryce, and now Gallagher. Through the center zone for Montreal, Dano sneaks in, the pass across, they score! Arturi Lehkonen wins it in overtime, and for the first time in 28 years, the Montreal Canadiens are on their way to the Stanley Cup Final!
Tells you how close I follow this. Apparently Canada's allowed fans again, because that sounded like a whole bunch of fans in the background.
I don't know. I thought it
was that piped-in crowd noise?
Because they showed, like, you could see in the background lights and stuff, but I don't know if that was digital stuff. I don't know. I honestly didn't see. You couldn't tell real well if that was real or not from what I saw.
Okay.
And I obviously didn't watch the game. I wasn't around, so.
I'm going to see if I can pull up a highlight here to see if you can see people in the stands or not. Of course, there's a pop-up ad, so I can't. I got to buy time there. But anyway, the Canadians went 3-2 in overtime, so they win the best of seven series, 4-2. And so they move on.
They did cut to, like, outside, and there was a ton of people just outside celebrating. So it's like, I don't know that why they would cut outside if there's no fans. Yeah.
So that was piped in crowd.
And they digitally put
Wait a minute. There are fans. There are fans. There are fans.
Were there?
Yeah. There are fans on the one side.
Okay.
There are fans on the one side. Yep. It's just on one side. So, because I know the last series, they didn't have fans.
They didn't have anybody, yeah.
So, apparently, for the conference finals for Montreal, they made some changes there in Canada. And, obviously, it had to be some kind of limited capacity situation. But, yeah, I'm pulling up this highlight, and there are fans in the stands. And they're not cardboard figures that, unless they've got lots of strings, jumping up for joy and putting both the hands up. So, there was actual crowd noise, and there was crowd there. So, that's great for Montreal. And I'm sure that gave them a lift, having them in the series. And, so Montreal wins and Vegas is done. So the Eastern Conference Finals, it's the Lightning defending champions tonight. Game 7, winner take all, hosting the New York Islanders. That's on NBC Sports Network for Game 7. Winner of that moves on to take on the Canadiens in the Stanley Cup Finals. And in hockey news, I'm so excited and couldn't wait to tell you about this. The Seattle Kraken release the Kraken. They've named their new head coach. And, well, of course, it's their first head coach. They are the only franchise, Dusty, in NHL to not have fired their coach. That is a fact. Dave Haxtell is their first head coach. Wayne has been listening to our show. He tagged me on Facebook, and that's how I found out that the Kraken got their new head coach. And I was going to comment right away, greatest coach of all time. But before I put that in there, I saw some people below going, that's the best we could get. Oh, I'm like, oh, no. No, do not think negative. We haven't played a game yet. We've signed one player. We haven't even had the expansion draft yet. Don't tell me this is a horrible hire. No. I don't want to hear the negativity. Hagstol is 52. He was an assistant coach for the Maple Leafs for two seasons, the last two seasons. He previously coached the Flyers for 3.5 seasons before he was fired. When he was hired by Philadelphia in 2015, Hagstol was a longtime coach at the University of North Dakota. He became the first head coach to jump from the NCAA to the NHL in 33 years. The Kraken begin playing next season as the NHL's 32nd franchise. Of course, they're in Seattle. They will hold their expansion draft on July 21st, less than a month away. I will have a personal watch party at my house for any other people that want to be Kraken fan club members. Here in North Central Kansas, I am the one and only member, I believe. But I am willing to expand, and you can jump on the bandwagon whenever you want. And when I tell you the Kraken are going to dominate the NHL within 5 years, you just remember where you heard it first, all right? And remember the first person, maybe in the state of Kansas, to have not one but two Seattle Kraken shirts. That would be yours truly. Release the Kraken.
I was about to ready to say I don't have any NHL shirts, but I do have a Clark Griswold Blackhawks jersey. So that's one of my Christmas shirts 1 year. Hey, just to, real quick, a little bit more about that Canadian fan thing. There were 3,500 fans that were allowed last night.
Yeah, they were allowed.
I said they cut to the outside, right? And they were going wild when they made that. Mm-hmm. They went very wild. They had to lock down the Bell Center, and those 3,500 fans had to stay in there.
Because
there were riots in Montreal because they made it to the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time in 28 years. Wow. And so they locked down the arena. I was just, like, looking up how many people were there in this story, man. The scene was crazy until, like, early morning hours.
Wow. Imagine what happens if they win at all.
They said there was a cop car overturned or something and just people going crazy. Yeah, huh. No kidding. What happens when they win the whole thing? Like
that will just, I don't know. Canada might have to shut down the whole country if that happens. That'd be countrywide.
This says fans also clashed with police after the Canadians swept the Jets in the second round of the playoffs.
Perfect. Like,
so they're happy about their team winning, apparently.
Yeah. Sounds like it. Well, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to riot when the Kraken win it all in a couple of years. Absolutely.
That's one thing I've never understood is why do you when your team wins something, why do you have to go tear stuff up?
I don't understand that. I've never understood
that. It's weird to me. Like, and it just, listen, this is not the first place it's happened. And it's like, how and why? Like, do you tear stuff up?
I get it when you're upset, you know, and you're protesting stuff, which I don't condone at all. And I don't like that people do it, but at least you know they're mad and
the
angry.
The source, right?
But when you're happy and you win, why are you destroying other people's property? I've never understood that either. It's kind of like I don't understand the chant overrated because you're taking a shot at your team because you're saying the other team isn't that good, but your team just beat them. You should be chanting underrated about your team instead of being negative Nelly, talking about the other team being overrated. You're actually demeaning what your team accomplished by saying that, but people aren't smart enough and they follow the herd, so one person starts chanting overrated. Hey, that's fun. Let's all chant overrated. And like, you're just a bunch of dunces when you do that. But whatever. Have your fun. Drink your beverages. Just please quit damaging property when things don't go well or when things go well.
Yeah, when things go really well.
Montreal's
going to burn if they win this.
It's going to be a lockdown.
It might burn if they don't win the whole thing.
Either way, it's going to burn.
They're going to be in trouble.
They're in trouble either way is what we're trying to say. You know? I've had no inkling to go visit Seattle, but since the Kraken now or my team, I now suddenly want to go Seattle. I really do. I don't know, but I want to see the
Kraken. You want to go stand out in the rain. Seattle's your place.
Yeah, sometimes it's too dry here. I need some rain. Yes, or I'll just wait till the Kraken come to Colorado, and I'll be the only Kraken fan, and then everybody will beat me up because I'm cheering for the Kraken against the Colorado Avalanche. I love their color scheme. I do. I don't know why I didn't wear a Seattle Kraken shirt today. I could have celebrated.
That is part of their colors you got on, though,
so
you're good.
I got the Kraken blue on. That's true. But the Kraken, they're going to start next season. And remember, you know, I say this tongue-in-cheek, well, they're going to dominate and they're going to take over the NHL. The Las Vegas Knights in their first year as a franchise expansion had the draft, like the Kraken are going to, and they went to the Stanley Cup Finals the very first year. And and there was so much excitement, and Vegas's home ice is as good as anybody in the league. And maybe that'll wear off down the line. I don't know. And they've been good now. They made it to the conference finals this year. Yeah. So they're off to an unbelievable start, that franchise. If they can do it, why can't Seattle? And with a name like Kraken, how can you go wrong?
state, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.